Hello, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central here on CheeseheadTV.com. The Super Bowl is what we're going to be talking about today. Packers are in the Green Bay. The Packers are headed for the Super Bowl in Dallas, Texas next week. Thanks for joining us today, everyone. Please remember that all tweets with the hashtags Railbird or the hashtags CheeseheadTV will get through to our blog. Or, as always, please feel free to use the Twitter widget underneath the broadcast player. Might be the last episode of Railbird Central till after the Super Bowl. Heading down there, just not sure I'm going to find time to do another episode of Railbird Central, or whether I'd even have the capability. Staying in a hotel room, it would be dependent upon how good their wireless access is and things like that. Don't worry, we'll still have lots of coverage here all week. Tried to do maybe a couple bird's eye view podcasts, things like that, but we will have plenty of coverage on CheeseheadTV.com, so make sure to come back. Who knows, maybe if I can get things working right, we'll have an impromptu episode of Railbird Central at some time next week. We will see. I can't predict the future. Got a great show lined up today. We're going to have a live report from Mobile, Alabama. Michael Schotte of DraftTech.com is going to be joining us in the second segment of the show today. I know everybody's geared up for the Super Bowl, but there's a big event going on in Mobile. Every other team in the NFL, the other 30 teams who aren't playing in the Super Bowl, that's where their attention is this week. And even the Packers' attention is there. Ted Thompson is in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. The general manager, even with the Packers playing in the Super Bowl, Ted Thompson's there. So this is important. I know everybody wants to talk Super Bowl, but we're going to take a couple minutes to talk Senior Bowl in the second half of the show. But first half, let's dedicate that to the Super Bowl. Folks want to talk about, I'm all ears. We'll start off today by taking a look at today's Packers Daily Links. I left a link to it at the top of the live blog if you scroll up, so make sure to follow along. Top story today. Chicago Bears defensive end Julius Peppers will receive a fine. If you click the link, it'll take you to a article written by the Associated Press. And here's the article. It's published at NFL.com. And it says, quote, Chicago Bears defensive end Julius Peppers has been fined $10,000 by the NFL for his helmet-to-helmet hit on Aaron Rodgers in the NFC Championship game that drew blood from the Green Bay Packer quarterback. So that's the background on the story. I guess what might be more interesting is the reaction. What does everybody think about this? Rodgers has said he didn't suffer a concussion from that play, even though some have hypothesized that he did. Didn't seem quite as sharp from that moment onward. Throws a little bit off, perhaps a little bit wobbly. I don't know. I don't believe he did. Aaron Rodgers isn't God. It's not like every single one of his passes has to be spot on or something's wrong with him. That's just the way things go. Not every pass is on target. He certainly got hit hard, got his bell rung. But I believe him if they say he didn't suffer a concussion. So the reaction to the story, perhaps just as interesting. Our second story down today, column from Chris Burke of allgreenbaypackers.com. One of the few outlets out there commenting on the story. I was looking this morning for some reaction. Not a whole lot of people reacted, but Chris did. So if you click the link, takes us to allgreenbaypackers.com. Another picture right there of Aaron Rodgers being hit. Chris writes, quote, for a player who recently signed a huge free agent contract that could total $91.5 million, $10,000 is like pennies to you and me. During the regular season, the NFL apparently made it crystal clear to teams and players that hits that involved the leading of the helmet would not be tolerated and would be met with stiff fines and possible suspensions. So the question I'm throwing out to everyone here, what do you think of the hit? Should he have been fined more? Should he have been fined at all? Was it a legal hit? Illegal hit? I mean, it's hard to argue by the definition of the rules nowadays that it was an illegal hit. But I suppose I could ask, do you agree with it? And should he have been fined more? I remember colleague Aaron Nagler yesterday on Twitter pointing out that Peppers being fined $10,000, and he compared that to Nick Collins being fined, I believe, $50,000 earlier this season for a hit on Roy Williams of the Dallas Cowboys, I believe, way back mid-season for the Packers. So compare those two. They seem to be comparable hits to me. Was one that much worse than the other? I don't know. But is Pepper's hit worth five times less than Nick Collins? Seems a little weird. Was Julius Peppers' fine too little? Was Nick Collins' fine too much? Maybe it's somewhere in the middle. So anyway, that's what I'm wondering about. And if you want to comment on the situation, please feel free. I'll put up the phone number. One second. If you want to call in today and share your thoughts on this situation, or anything for that matter, you want to talk about the Super Bowl, you want to talk about the Steelers, whatever, the phone number is area code 646-797-2900. 09. So, taking a look at the live blog, some of the comments rolling in here. Chad Taporsky comments, the NFL has been unbelievably biased in their fines for illegal hits. John Rahor says, no consistency in fines that are handed down. That's my issue. I Bleed Green and Gold says, illegal hit, no concussion. Midwest Fan says, should have been fined $100,000 and ejected from the game. Chad Taporsky then comments, Peppers had an amazing amount of time to line up that shot. It was dirty, if you ask me. So, all sorts of different takes here on the topic. Jamie Lee says, I think there should be a flat fine for a helmet-to-helmet hit. There is a wide discrepancy. I personally like what the NFL has done cracking down on helmet-to-helmet hits. I understand that, especially when you have defenseless players, quarterbacks, wide receivers who are catching the pass, they don't have a time to brace themselves. They don't have time to put down a shoulder, avoid that hit if they're trying to catch a pass or trying to make a pass. So I understand what the NFL is trying to do. It just is. It's a very subjective thing when you're trying to levy fines. I mean, it's... I mean, once again, you just go back to Nick Collins, five times more. Was that hit five times more? You know, does the fact that the Bears are done have anything to do with it? Does the NFL think that, well, because the Bears are done playing, this isn't going to get as much attention as it would, say, if the just hypothetically, if the Bears had won the NFC Championship game and they were in the Super Bowl, this would probably be getting more attention, you know, especially from the Chicago media. I mean, would from the Green Bay media as well. I don't know. I would doubt it, but it just does. The consistency is weird. There doesn't seem to be consistency, I guess. Trying to get off the sound here. There we go. I think I turned it off. You don't have to hear all the comments coming through. But it does look like comments are being moderated this morning. So if you want to comment on our live blog, Alex Talich is being our moderator this morning. Thank you, Alex. Cheesehead Chick comments, with Pepper's salary, $10,000 is barely a slap. It's more of a tickle. Zub comments, fine or so wrong as far as fairness. I remember when Brad Jones got fined, thinking how unjust. He makes the league minimum while Peppers makes millions. And that is a little bit of a weird dichotomy, if you will. You know, for players making practically the league minimum, $10,000 is a lot of money. For a guy like Brad Jones, you know, if he makes league minimum for 2 years, and let's just, you know, again, make believe here. Let's say Brad Jones does not play again next year. He does not make the team. He can't overcome his injury. And I'm not saying that he's not going to. This is just make-believe. This is just for the sake of argument. I'm playing devil's advocate here. You know, that's a lot of money to a Brad Jones. If you hit unrestricted free agency in the NFL, if you're lucky enough to be able to play for whether it's 4 or 6 years, depending on the collective bargaining agreement, you know, if you're lucky to play that long, you know, you're almost set for life financially if you manage your money well. But if you only happen to play a year or two in the NFL at minimum wage, yeah, you made good money for that year or two, very good money, but that is not enough to set you for the rest of your life. Chad Toporsky comments, Zombo was fined $7.5K. That hurt him a lot because of his salary. Should be graduated based on player contract. I guess I might ask, is that fair? I mean, what if a player with a small contract, you know, gives a devastating hit? I mean, let's say a minimum wage player like Frank Zombo, just again, hypothetically, for the sake of argument, he puts on one of the dirtiest hits in the NFL. Let's say he paralyzes someone. Not that I think he's going to or should or will or anything. You know, I think people would be outraged then that just because of his salary that he doesn't have a large fine. There's a lot to think about here. It's not such a cut and dry issue. Very interesting. Anyhow, I suppose we really haven't talked about the Super Bowl yet. Kind of been talking about a topic that really happened during the NFC Championship game, although that was the game that got the Packers to the Super Bowl. Let's talk about Photogate for a minute. Go back to today's Packers Daily Links, third story down today. An article from Jason Wilde of ESPNMilwaukee.com. If you click this link, it'll take you to Jason's article, and he talks about the Super Bowl team photo and who should be in it and who shouldn't. And yesterday, Mike McCarthy was asked about it for the first time in a press conference and, you know, kind of closed the argument. So I imagine this will be the last time we talk about the team photo here as well. But, you know, seeing as Mike McCarthy was just asked about it yesterday, I suppose it's still newsworthy today. Jason Wilde writes, quote, Mike McCarthy spent Monday and Tuesday setting up his schedule for the week, only to have quarterback Aaron Rodgers and cornerback Charles Woodson, two of the team's playoff captains, come to his office after Barnett and Finley took their gripes to their legion of Twitter followers. While McCarthy called the Twitter the twit-tweeter, you get the point that he was less than thrilled with the pair and that he was ready to let the issue pass with an eye roll before the captains came to him. I suppose the news really is that, you know, McCarthy kind of had some not-so-kind words for Barnett and Finley. What did he say? I'm trying to think of the quote McCarthy said yesterday during the conference. He said, quote, because of the individuals involved. As if he's saying, these are guys who are known to run their mouth. And that's true to an extent. Certainly, Nick Barnett and JerMichael Finley, I don't think, always think well ahead of time what they're writing on Twitter or what they might say in the media, how that might impact other people, the effects it might have. They just kind of, they're very opinionated and they're not afraid to let anyone know about it. But, you know, the Packers changed their course. They agreed to make the team photo on the Friday before the Super Bowl, 2 days before the Super Bowl. Which kind of is, you know, somewhat of a big deal. It's a rigmarole of team photo, folks. Especially when you've got, you know, how many players are there in IR plus the 53 on the roster? So you're talking, what, about 75 players-ish? What would be slightly less than that. Around 70 players. And then you've got all the coaches. So you, what is that, a dozen? So you're talking over 80 people. They got to all get dressed up, put on their pads, put on their jerseys, all that. This is not a small undertaking. A team photo. I mean, this is going to take probably more than an hour out of their day just for the photo. Really? That's going to take an hour out of somebody's day, you know, when they're trying to win the most important games of their life. Comment here from Illinois Pack fan. That's going to be a large team photo. Yes, it is. It's going to be a large photo. Lucas Richmond, 44, says, remember Finley said he has grown up so much in the last year? Oops. He has, to an extent. You know, JerMichael Finley is certainly not the same person he was as a rookie. Does he have a ways to go? I think so. You know, kind of related here. Interesting column, opinion. I quoted in today's Packers Daily Links related to this. Comes from Packer Update, Michael Rodney saying he doesn't think Nick Barnett will be with the team next year. Kind of a jumping off point from this situation that happened with the team photo. And, you know, Mr. Rodney even admits it didn't really have a ton to do with, you know, Photogate itself or how Barnett reacted. But he writes, quote, "The thing I noticed right away was how much more physically the defense played without Barnett in the lineup. Instead of trying to run around blockers, Desmond Bishop and A.J. Hawk are far more willing to take them on. And instead of relying on sheer athleticism to keep up with backs and tight ends and coverage, the current starters are far more willing to pound on the receivers at the line of scrimmage or within 5 yards. It's a mindset that has served the entire defense well this season, and one I'm pretty sure defensive coordinator Dom Capers wants to carry into the future." So again, another question I'll throw out. Do you think the Packers will keep Nick Barnett next year? You know, I suppose I'm not entirely sold on it, but it is a possibility. I'd be remiss to not think so. It's going to be interesting to see what the Packers do at inside linebacker next year, and I suppose most people want to get through the Super Bowl first before they think about that. But, you know, seeing as this whole incident popped up and how Nick Barnett reacted, you know, it's kind of noteworthy right now. Nick Barnett has done other things in the past that have gotten negative publicity. You remember a couple years ago, a couple seasons ago, this must have been about 3 years ago now, that in the middle of the summer, it was actually the day before the old, was it the Brett Favre celebrity softball game, or I can't remember, had it changed hands by then, and it was now the Donald Driver celebrity game, or what have you, that he was out, you know, at a nightclub or a bar the night before and got into a little bit of a tussle or, you know, I think they found out that nothing was, you know, there wasn't any physical altercation going on, but still, you know, a situation blew up and at least there was a verbal sparring going on at a bar that Barnett was involved in and, you know, just a situation that probably should have been avoided. So trouble seems to find him a little bit. Nothing big. We certainly aren't talking about Ben Roethlisberger type of situation here. But still, nothing minor either. It's big enough to have gotten the attention of media. Trying to think here, trying to look at the comments on the live blog here. David says 50-50 on Barnett. Yeah, and it really is almost that right now. It's hard to say what the Packers are going to do because there's, you know, so many variables involved in the inside linebacker situation. You know, Chad Toporsky says the question is who can run the defense. We've got A.J. Hawk, but if he goes down, and what about Hawk's contract? John Rahor says it all depends on what they decide to do with Hawk. Lots of different situations here and what's going on. David says, I think Hawk does a better job of quarterbacking the defense. Illinois Pack fan says, the Pack defense has played much better with Hawk calling plays. Look at our stats since Barnett has gone down. Barnett is a liability at middle linebacker. He's too small and cannot take on blockers. Patrick J. Dupree comments, I think the preference is to have Hawk back, but he must restructure or he won't be back. So interesting. If anybody wants to call in here quickly, we're going to have a guest on next segment, so I'm not sure the phone lines are going to be open then. If anybody wants to throw a comment in now, speak now or forever hold your peace. If you want to comment on Bishop, Hawk, Barnett, the whole concussion situation, fines, or the Super Bowl, feel free to give a shout out. Phone number is on the screen, 646 797-2909 as we do a Super Bowl edition of Railbird Central here on CheeseheadTV.com. Illinois Pack fan asked, did AJ ever sell his house? You know, I don't think that AJ Hawk ever sold his house. I don't think it happened. Of course, that got some attention mid-season or earlier in the season that it was for sale. I'm not sure anything ever became of that. I think the argument was that he wanted a bigger house because his wife's having a baby, I believe. You know, and I've heard people say his house is plenty big already, which, you know, kind of came off as an excuse that he would need a better or a bigger house. And Packers Lounge says when you had Laura on, she said it was for different reasons. And we did talk to Laura Hawk on Railbird Central earlier in the season. But, you know, she didn't say a whole lot, of course, not wanting to comment on that situation a whole lot. B. Markovich, 57, says, if Hawk is willing to restructure his contract for a reasonable price, I don't think Barnett is going to come back. Well, it's not about what Barnett wants to do. You know, the Packers have control over Nick Barnett. You know, he's under contract for next season. So, I mean, if Hawk does restructure and the Packers don't cut Barnett or trade him, you know, he's with the team. Barnett's getting paid millions of dollars too. You know, he signed a nice contract a couple years ago, but, you know, he's not the highest paid player in the NFL, but, you know, he signed a nice contract. And, so Barnett has a deal in place and, he has to honor that contract. It's not like he's in a position to hold out for more money or anything like that either. Chad DePorsky says, how does Hawk's personality affect the contract situation? That is kind of interesting. AJ Hawk's personality is, you know, he doesn't seem to be the type of person who's going to make a big stink about this. you know, he could be the type of person who would gladly do a restructuring of the contract, and because he's had a solid season, you know, the Packers probably certainly might be willing to do that. But at the same time, too, he's not going to let the Packers take advantage of him. You know, AJ Hawk played well enough this season that whether with the Packers or the not, whether or not it's with the Packers, he's going to get a nice contract somewhere in the NFL. Again, perhaps not the highest paid linebacker ever, but a nice multi-million dollar contract that would be less than the $10 million he's scheduled to make next season. Zub says, in my opinion, Hawk is going to force the contract, forcing the Packers to cut him just to know what his options are. He can always re-sign with the Packers. But if the Packers give him a reasonable deal, there's no reason he wouldn't do that, I don't think. You know, if the Packers give him a competitive contract, you know, I'm sure all things being equal, he would want to stay. It's 8:30, folks. I'm going to take a break. Like I said earlier, we're going to talk when we come back with Michael Shoddy of DraftTech.com. Talk about the Senior Bowl. He's live in Mobile, Alabama. Been there all week. So we're going to find out what's going on at the Senior Bowl. Hang on. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Railbird Central here on GZTV.com. Joining us on the line is Michael Shoddy from the Senior Bowl. How are you today, Michael?
Hey, doing great there, Brian. Good to be with you.
Thanks a lot. So I'm assuming you are still in Mobile. I believe, if I'm correct, Senior Bowl practice is wrapped up yesterday, and all that's left is the game. Am I right in that assumption?
Yeah, practices, real, like, live practices wrapped up Wednesday. Yesterday were some walkthroughs, and today there'll be an even more less intense walkthroughs. It's really weird. The city actually has two halves. The first half of the week is all the scouts and media are here watching the practices, and then it kind of like shuts down for Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday become like the actual event where, you know, the town just gears up for the game, and there's all sorts of, you know, kid stuff and eating contests, and, you know, so the football stuff is over, and I'm ready to get out of town.
Sounds good. Of course, all the Packer fans, their attention's on the Super Bowl, but lots of important things are going on. So, you know, with, you know, all our attention on the Super Bowl, Packer fans probably haven't heard a whole lot about what's going on over there, who stood out this week. So that's the question I'll throw to you. Who has looked good this week? Who are the big names that have improved their stock?
Well, the big storyline is always the quarterbacks. And this was probably one of the better quarterback classes that we've had at the Senior Bowl. That's not saying much, but, you know, heard stories from other scouts and media people who talked about 2-3 years ago when, you know, the best quarterback here was, his name is escaping me, the kid from West Virginia, who went to Miami.
Yes.
Can't remember.
His name escapes me too, but I know who you're talking about.
But the point being that when the quarterbacks here aren't good, that makes everyone else look bad as well. So this week there was the chance to do a bunch of scouting with actual decent NFL-level throws. Jake Locker was the huge name. He didn't have a great week. He's still a first-round prospect in everyone's eyes just because of his name and because of the potential he has. Ricky Stanzi had a decent week. He was off and on, but I think he showed he can be an NFL quarterback. Mm-hmm. Christian Ponder the same way. Has a lot of pock marks, has a lot of question marks with arm strength, and he's had multiple surgeries on that same arm. But his arm actually looks stronger this week than we've seen it in college. He looks like he could be a really good West Coast quarterback. He can't put a ton of zip on the ball, but he can, you know, work between the hashes all day for you. He can still throw that deep out when you absolutely need him to. The quarterback has surprised a lot of people, and everyone's still split on him as Colin Kaepernick. He didn't jump 2 rounds or 3 rounds like some are saying, but he's a big, tall guy. He was an option quarterback out of Nevada, but he can throw the ball around. And he's got a really strong arm, probably the strongest arm here this week, more so than Jake Locker. And at, I believe he's 6'4", he was by far the best physical prospect this week.
Really, that's interesting to me. He looks like the type of player, Kaepernick, that is kind of, you know, frail. By NFL standards, he looks like it. You know, I realize he is very good, but it surprises me that he has a bigger arm because he's more known for his legs, I think, more than anything. Am I right?
Yeah, he's a long player. I mean, he's very tall. He's I wouldn't say he's thin. He's narrow. Mm-hmm. One of the weird and crazy things about scouting is the first day we were here, we all got to stand in the ballroom of the players' hotel and watch all the players parade through in spandex as they got their heights and weights measured. This happens again at the combine in a couple of weeks. But Kaepernick's not thin. Kaepernick definitely has a whole lot of beef on those bones. You know, you look at guys then like Greg McElroy or Ricky Stanzi, and those guys, again, you don't want to call them thin, but those are the guys that don't look like NFL athletes. Mm-hmm. Andy Dalton, Christian Ponder, and Kaepernick all look, you know, like they could take someone in a street fight. That's Kaepernick's body type. He looks like he should be a UFC fighter and not a football player.
Very good. One of the Packers, I think, in my opinion, one of their weaker positions is 3-4 outside linebacker. In fact, it's kind of interesting as we look at the Super Bowl. The players lining up opposite Clay Matthews are injured this week. Frank Zombo, Eric Walden, and the Packers are about down to their fifth or sixth string outside linebacker. So if they're looking to add depth there next year, who are some of the 3-4 outside linebackers you saw?
Well, the other big name of this week was Von Miller, the linebacker slash defensive end from Texas A&M. And I believe personally that he played his way out of the chance of being a Green Bay Packer because he was thought of as a top 15. Maybe he could slide into the 20s. So maybe the Packers could have went up and got him if they really liked him. I know they're not used to doing that. But there was a chance at least that Von Miller, depending on how the draft fall, could have gone to the Green Bay Packers. I think some mocks were taking him there. But he probably played himself into a top 10, maybe a top 5, if you believe Adam Schefter's reports pick this week. He's just everything that people say he can't do, he did in spades this week. He was one of the best linebackers in coverage. He was one of the best linebackers engaging in shedding blocks. Those are things people said he couldn't do, but over the course of the season, surprise, surprise, players get better. So when you're looking at scouting reports that were written last summer or from people who really only watched last year and who don't watch every Texas A&M game, you know, players get better, and Von Miller got better. And he's one, you know, he's a guy that, you know, I know the Packers can't get him, but I think he's going to be the stud outside linebacker of the class. Some other guys that the Packers have a better shot at, and there is a big drop-off, I believe, from Von Miller. Mark Herzlick is, you know, he's a guy who can probably play every linebacker position. I don't know if he's your 100% edge rusher on the outside, but he can certainly stand up to the run out there. Mm-hmm. He's a great story after beating bone cancer from Boston College, and he looks phenomenal. And the fact that he's probably not 100% in shape right now is great. Another guy familiar to Packer fans, Casey Matthews. He's not his brother. He's not going to go in the first. He's probably going to go more in the fourth or the fifth. But he's a good guy. He can stand up against the run. He can, you know, get tackles for you behind the line of scrimmage. This week I called him ubiquitous. Just every time you looked out on the field, you saw that neon green O on his helmet. No matter where the ball was, he was there. And, you know, like I said, he's a guy you're going to take in the fourth or fifth round, but he's a guy that every team would like around. Yeah. Another guy that the Packers could take a long look at is K.J. Harris out of Mississippi State. He's a smaller guy, but he's got ridiculously long arms. And he can just he rushes the passer so well and gets rid of blockers so well with those long arms that he's going to be an impact player for any team right away.
Packer fans, of course, are very interested in that connection between Casey Matthews and Clay Matthews. Casey played on the inside in college. Could he end up there as opposed to outside linebacker?
It really does depend on the team. If for 4-3 teams, they're not going to play him in the middle at all. And certain 3-4 teams, I believe the Packers like their outside linebackers a little bigger. And then you look at teams like the Patriots, who like their, you know, their outside linebackers look like linemen. They're so huge.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on the team and the scheme. He is smaller, but he has room to add weight. He kind of looks like a guy who's always dependent on his speed, and when he gets to the NFL, anyone's going to ask him to bulk up a little bit. He was really the only linebacker that I never saw get yelled at. I'm not going to say he played perfectly or always was doing the right thing, but there were so many linebackers here who just had the coaches in their ear constantly, no, no, do this, do that. And some of them, you know, those players relish the coaching, but you never want to see a guy get, like, high school style, you know, this is where you have to put your face. You know, that kind of coaching tells me that you probably didn't get that coaching in college, or you just didn't get it when you got it in college. So Matthews, if anything, you know, even if he's not a starting linebacker for your team, and I'm not sure for the Packers he would be a reserve, and he would be, you know, a top special teamer, and I think that you guys, if anyone, might take him around, you know, before anyone else, because, you know, Clay's going to be in someone's ear about that pick.
Another position the Packers, I think, could use some depth next year because they have some free agents at the position. They have some older players along the offensive line like Chad Clifton and Mark Tauscher. You just never know about them. So along the offensive line, who are some guys who are some tackles or maybe the guys who could be a guard tackle? You're not sure where they're going to fit in yet. Who are some of the better ones there?
Well, what I've never understood about the Green Bay Packers is why they don't just draft the Wisconsin offensive line every year. You just do that every 4 years, you're going to have a good offensive line. And this year they might have a chance. Last pick of the first round, hopefully for you guys can get Gabe Kerimi, the tackle out of Wisconsin. He played really well this week, and by really well, I mean up to his standards. And what he did was he silenced a lot of critics that said, well, he can't play left tackle. He can't play left tackle. He did this week, and he played well. What he also did was show that he can be an elite right tackle and even played guard. And so you're getting a guy who's willing to give up the millions just to show people he has the versatility to play guard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's such a character guy. He's such a stand-up guy. He's hilarious. Everyone who interviewed Gabe Kerimi this week said he's the sharpest tool in the box down here and, you know, wanted to go interview him again. I got a chance to interview John Moffitt. He's an inside guy. You guys can probably get him a round later, maybe even two rounds later, depending on how the guards fall. He's a guy who just wins at the point of attack and steer guys the way he wants them to go. He's the captain of an offensive line. He'll make the line calls for you for day one. I mean, if you can get those two guys, I think you're sitting pretty. The guy who might fall to you is Nate Solder. He's the tackle out of Colorado. He's 6'8". He's just a mountain of a man. He's got all sorts of, you know, coaching that needs to be done. But he was viewed as a really raw prospect. I mean, he came in this week looking extremely good. And again, silenced a lot of critics who said, well, he's just a body. He's not really a player. And he played this week, and I think he narrowed the gap between him and Derek Sherrod as the top tackle.
Very interesting. One of the things I'm always interested about is who did the Packers talk to? Of course, General Manager Ted Thompson is in Mobile. A lot of their scouts. Did you happen to see the Packers talk to any players, interview them or just informally? Maybe there's so many teams there, that 32 teams, maybe you didn't. But do you have a scoop shoddy for us?
Well, the most important thing to remember is that, and I've mentioned this on Twitter in an article a couple times this week, is that, everyone sees everybody. You know, all these practices are taped. Those go back with the scouts. And everyone really talks to everybody. When you see one, you'll see a news report, so-and-so was talking to, Casey Matthews. Well, at the same time, another scout was probably talking to another player.
Yeah.
And so I don't look necessarily specifically. I did see Ted Thompson a couple of times. He looked like he was just sitting up towards the top of the rafters, not wanting anyone to talk to him, a couple scouts around him. So I didn't see him, peering in specifically at one position group. And I think that's just his style. He's going to take the tape home, and he's going to watch it, and if he wants to talk to anyone, he'll get him at the combine.
Very good. Michael, thank you very much for joining us today. I love talking about the draft and Senior Bowl and whatever. You write for DraftTech.com, Bleacher Report. Do you want to give a quick plug for the things you're doing there and things people can look forward to?
Yeah, you can check out my profile, Bleacher Report, just by searching Mike Shoddy, Bleacher Report. I manage an internship for them, so I don't do a ton of writing anymore for them. You can also look, I did Senior Bowl recaps all week for rotoworld.com. You can check my stuff out there. And then also drafttech.com, which full 7-round mock every week through some pretty insane computer algorithms. And it's pretty easy to get in touch with the Packer guy there. It's just packers@drafttech.com. And that's Jersey Al, who I'm sure a lot of you know.
Thanks a lot, Shoddy, for taking your time. I know you're probably on your way out of Mobile, so I won't take up anymore. But thanks you very much for joining us, and take care.
Yep, thank you, Brian. Go back.
Thanks. Michael Shoddy of DraftTech.com and Bleacher Report joining us here on Railbird Central. Make sure to check out his work. It's been very informative talking to him. I love the draft. And as we said on Packer Transplants on Wednesday night, if you didn't happen to hear, Cheesehead TV is going to put out a PDF draft publication for the first time this year. So get ready for that, folks. Very excited to debut that this year. And the most exciting thing about the publication we're going to be putting out is that we're making it Packer-specific. It's going to be specifically geared to the types of players the Packers want. So instead of positions, like, you know, just looking at the linebackers or things like that. It is broken down 3-4 outside linebackers, 3-4 inside linebackers for the Packers, things like that. It's broken up into outside offensive linemen and interior offensive linemen. Of course, you know, the tackles seem to be interchangeable for the Packers, as well as all three interior positions. The guards and centers are almost, you know, interchangeable. We'll have things like Packers-only mock drafts. Who are the Packers going to draft in the first round, the second round, the third round? So totally geared to the Packers fan, which I think is going to make it really unique and a real a bang for your buck. It is going to be for pay, but it's going to be cheap, folks. But I think it's something people will dole out money for if you're a Packer fan, just because it is going to be geared to the Packers fan, unlike any other publication out there. And it's a PDF, so it will be something that will be downloaded. And you can read right on your computer. Right now, we're a little over 50 pages of Packer-specific draft information. Look forward to that after the Super Bowl. Shadi mentioned Gabe Kareemi, and I wanted to chime in on that for a second. I'm a Wisconsin season ticket holder, so I've seen a lot of Gabe Kareemi over the past couple years. And prior to this year, I was really down on Gabe Kareemi. I thought he has been overrated for quite some time. His junior year, especially last year, I thought he kind of got more attention than he deserved. He frequently got beat by speed rushers off the edge. And I still think that's his biggest weakness. But the way he played this year, he improved a lot. He really was able to neutralize the best players that lined up across from him. And I think he's improved his stock quite a bit. I still have my doubts whether he'll be a left tackle in the NFL. I think he might be better suited for right tackle. We will see. We will see. But I must admit, I've been outspoken against Gabe Kareemi, but I'm coming around on him. I'm coming around. I think he was overrated prior to his senior season, but he improved a lot this year. And it's part of the reason the Wisconsin Badgers did so well, that they won the Big Ten title, tied for it, and went to the Rose Bowl this year. So Gabe Kareemi has done really well. And the guy who I thought was the best offensive lineman all along is John Moffitt, who Shadi mentioned as well. I think he's going to be a very good guard. I think he's going to be a value pick in the, you know, mid rounds. Will he go as early as the second? I don't know. Perhaps late second, like where the Packers pick. I think he can be really good at one of the best guards. I think he can be a starter in the NFL at guard. So I think very highly of John Moffitt, because it's not like I think he improved his senior year. I think he's been good all along. Jersey Pack Fan says J.J. Watt is a fifth round pick. Sorry, Jersey Pack Fan. J.J. Watt is probably a first round pick. He is really good. There's reasons the Badgers went to the Rose Bowl this year. They have a lot of really good players. Gabe Kareemi, John Moffitt, and J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt is a first round. He might not go in the first round. Second round at latest, I believe. He's really talented. In my opinion, for my money, Yeah, like I said, I was Wisconsin Badgers season ticket holder. I've seen them a lot. He, for my money, was the best defensive end in the Big Ten, and there was a lot of them. There was Claiborne from Iowa. There was Kerrigan from Purdue, and those guys are good too. And I mean, perhaps that's why I think he's so good. Found in Idaho's second round, we could pick him up. J.J. Watt will be gone by the time the Packers select in the second round. He's the type of player I think could play in either a 4-3 or a 3-4. So I think that makes him a little bit even more valuable to teams in the NFL. David asks, is he big enough for the 3-4? Definitely. Definitely. He's 280 now, and you just look at C.J. Wilson and Jarius Wynn for the Packers. They're in the 280 range. Could he stand to put on a little bit more weight if he became a defensive end in a 3-4? Yes, he probably should put some weight. The thing to me is he looks filled out. I don't know how much more weight he can handle without compromising things like speed and agility and stuff like that. I don't know. I guess I'm not an expert in that area, but I think he's good enough that he can play in either situation. He just seems to me he's that versatile. So I imagine if he does get drafted into a 3-4 defense, whether it's with the Packers or not, and probably not just based upon the odds, but, you know, he probably will bulk up a little bit more, and you know, living in an NFL weight room will certainly help in that regard. But we're getting near the end of the show here, folks, and spent a lot of time talking draft the second half of the show. But thanks, everyone, for joining us. As I said before, if you joined us a little late, this probably might be the last edition of Railbird Central until after the Super Bowl. I, along with, you see him on the live blog, Jamie Jors and Alex Talich, we're all going to be in Dallas next week and providing coverage all week long, but probably just won't have the time or the available means to have a Railbird Central. So thanks, everyone, for joining us. We plan on having just fantastic coverage, you know, going to be at every press conference, and Corey Behnke is going to be photographer extraordinaire next week. We should have some great pictures and galleries for you to see. And it should be really interesting. Things like Media Day, which you see on ESPN, I'm sure, and all the media outlets. It's just an interesting situation there. Patrick J. Dupree asked, do I have crazy Media Day questions planned? I'm not sure my questions will be crazy, but I do have a couple planned, so we will see. Make sure Jamie does your Super Bowl makeup. Yeah, if anybody hasn't checked it out already, Jamie has done a Super Bowl makeup video for some. She put it on YouTube, I know. I think there's some sort of, is it a contest going on? So Jamie, is that voted upon? What? Who picks the winner? What's the deal there? I'd be interested to know, because we gotta get, if this is something that's voted upon, we're gonna have to get Packers fans out in force to vote for Jamie and her makeup video. Packers Lounge says it's on Packers Lounge. Very good. So everybody go check it out there. CheeseheadTV.com/lounge. For those of you who are going to be in Dallas or around Dallas, we are going to have a tweet up at some point in, you know, later in the week, Friday, Saturday. Stay tuned. Details will be available for those of you going to be there. A little bit of a party situation before the Super Bowl. We're fans of CheeseheadTV.com can gather and talk about the game and enjoy a couple adult beverages, or other beverages for that matter as well. So, again, thanks for joining us today, folks. It's been fun. It's been quite the run here that the Packers have made, and it's going to be exciting. So thanks, everyone. Stay tuned to Cheesehead TV all week long, and take care, folks. Go Pack, go. It's the Super Bowl. See you later.